Hey friends, it's Katie with a quick intro before our normal intro. So today's episode was actually recorded in March of 2020, and given the topic of selling a business, we didn't feel it was appropriate to air it in April, May, when it was originally slated to be released. With the pandemic happening and businesses struggling, we just didn't feel that it was a timely or even relevant topic to be sharing with you at the time. However, the story is really impactful and important, and I greatly admire Mary Beth Storjohan, so I did want this episode to see the light of day. We are going to go ahead and air it today, and I hope that you gain a lot of clarity from it and inspiration for how you can grow and decide what to do with your business. You can make this business run any which way you want, so let's jump into it. We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses. There is so much information out there tailored towards service providers, so we have carved out a space just for you. The creative entrepreneurs making and selling physical goods. We're firm believers that everyone has a story to share, and there is so much we can learn from each other's business journey. Whether you are just starting out or a seasoned business owner, this podcast will shed light on new strategies, inspiration, and action steps to help you grow your product-based business. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, and welcome back to Proof to Product. Today, I invited Mary Beth Storjohan back to the show. Mary Beth is a certified financial planner and has been a partner and chief marketing officer with Abacus since 2019, following the merger of her firm, Workable Wealth. With over 14 years of experience in the financial services industry, she works as an author, speaker, and financial coach to apply fun, albeit no-nonsense approach to working with entrepreneurial women and couples in their 30s to 50s across the country. She helps them make smart, educated choices with their money, and she's focused on helping 50,000 women make stronger financial decisions and become financially savvy. Mary Beth was on episode 28 of Proof to Product, where we talked about money misconceptions and the importance of knowing your numbers in business. But today, we are talking about what it was like to sell her business. She's talking about the decision-making process, what she went through as she was weighing the pros and cons, concerns she had during this whole process, and the things that were non-negotiable that she included in her contract. She also provides general advice for others who are considering selling their business. Hey, Mary Beth, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Katie, thanks for having me.
Of course. So some background for our listeners real quick. You and I met in 2016 at a conference that we were both speaking at. And after hearing your presentation, I knew that I needed some Mary Beth in my life. So since then, you have essentially been the virtual CFO in my business, as well as helping Patrick and I in our personal lives. And you guys, for anyone listening, I'm here to tell you that everyone needs a Mary Beth in their life. So
that's my new tagline or my new slogan. Everybody needs a Mary Beth.
Everybody does. But when you were on the show previously, the podcast here, it was episode 28, we talked about money misconceptions and fears, as well as why people really need to be paying attention to their numbers. And so if you haven't listened to that already, you guys, I recommend you go listen to that. But today I want to dive into your story of not only starting your business, but how you recently sold your business.
Yes. So exciting.
It is. It was a very exciting journey and anxious at the same
Tumultuous.
Ups and downs, sideways, as I'm sure all sales are. So take us back to the early days. How did you define success in the early days of your business?
Oh my gosh. Somebody paying me for my services was success.
Anybody paying me.
Yeah, because when you're starting, I mean, which is interesting too about women, I especially think it's funny about women in my industry, especially as I've built my career. I was in the industry already for 10 years before I launched Workable Wealth.
Wow.
And even then, at 10 years as a financial planner, I was one of the youngest CFPs in the country at the time that I earned my designation. And even with all of that, when I launched my own business, I was like, ooh, are people going to pay me for this? Like, is this going to work? And it was terrifying. And so yeah. I remember being priced very low when I launched for like two clients and then realizing like that is not sustainable. But I mean, the success initially was, you know, just get somebody paying me.
Right.
And it's funny now as I work with business owners, it's like you can't do that. That's not actually, you can't build I always say set your first five that you'll sell for the discounted rate. And then after that, you have to go whatever, you know, market rate is or above. So that was initially, it was somebody paying me. Also, I would say success for me looked like working full-time still. I didn't do, I didn't launch the business in terms of it being, the flexibility was great. I worked from home, but I still intended for it to be a full-time job and a full-time thing. And so I think success for me looked like replacing that salary that I left behind at that job that I transitioned out of. For me, that was kind of the success bar. And which is funny because he talked to my husband, Brian, and he's like, oh, I planned for you to make no money for 3 years. I was like, oh, thanks for the confidence. But he always goes back to that. He's like, yeah, we thought you'd make no money for 3 years. Like, you thought I'd make no money.
Not for three years.
That was success. It was kind of breaking even on that salary, being able to bring home what I was making. And then beyond that, I was really, and we can talk about this transition that I'm kind of in now after selling. It was always very numbers focused. Success for me was, what am I bringing into the business? Because as I built the company, I also transitioned into being or planning to be the breadwinner for the family. Mm-hmm. So for success for me was dollars, net income focused, and obviously happy and healthy, like clients and like success for them. But for me, it was dollars driven for me for quite some time, probably until the past 12 to 18 months of the transition to selling. But that was what was very driven by dollars. I had my target marks I needed to make in terms of net income to our household to be able to afford a certain lifestyle. So that's what it did. It was dollars focused for me. I didn't, and other things kind of went on the back burner, which now led me to the point of probably selling.
Right.
Where we're at now.
Okay. So when did you start Walkable Wealth?
What I started Walkable Wealth in August of 2013.
Okay. And when were you first approached with inquiries of buying or merging?
I'd say probably, it was 2017, 2018. Like 2017, I think there was like talk from other planners of people as my brand built and my popularity grew in the industry, there was other planners that would be interested in merging. So as we're kind of scaling services and trying to build things out, there was the prospect of merging in with a peer-to-peer kind of merging, 50-50 partnership.
Right.
Those talks started early on from some of like my more peer group. Inquiries in terms of being like buying and selling, that was 2018, right? Because I sold in 2018. Yeah, so 2018 is when they got serious as I started to entertain the offer and position with Abacus. That's when other things started to come my way as well of like, okay, well, you could also do this. We could buy and you could take this thing. And so there was a few areas and places that I was looking and people I was speaking with to kind of see what my options were.
Okay.
So 2018. So 5 years in. 5 years in.
5 years in. Okay. Those early inquiries, though, from people that wanted to like partner with you and, you had some people putting feelers out. You clearly didn't say yes to those. Did you take them seriously? Did you have any interest in them? Or was it always like, nope, forging my own way, doing my own thing?
I think the interesting thing for all of us is we know what our skill set is, right? And I love being a financial planner. I love doing marketing and reaching new people. I love doing the financial planning work. Did not so much like the compliance and like some of like the techie stuff that like comes with it. And so for me, I entertained them. I thought about them in terms of merging, like, would I be the face of a practice marketing and bringing in clients and doing financial planning, and somebody else follows the, like, does the tech and the legal and all of that side. So I considered that for a minute and then ultimately decided to do my own. So those were the ones, like the early ones, I was like, maybe. And then I'm like, it's better off on my own. Like, it's not that bad. Is it 85% good, 15% bad. That's just part of what, you don't enjoy everything.
No, we don't enjoy everything about running a business. Sorry, sidetracked there. Okay, so let's fast forward then fast forward to 2018 when, Abacus came and started to express an interest in purchasing your business. Did you say yes the first time, or were you open to the discussions the first time, or did you kind of shoot them down and say no and then like revisit it later? Like, what was that initial conversation like? Were you just like, nope, not doing this, or...
The initial conversation, and so the interesting thing about Abacus when I actually started down the path was, and this is me as a financial planner, I really tried to treat the sale of this business. It was very emotional, as you know, but I tried to distance myself from the emotional standpoint and act as I would advise any client to act. Mm-hmm. And so what happened was the president of Abacus had been mentoring a group of us for 18 months anyways, and the group that I was in, it's also another cohort of financial planners, and they were insisting the whole time that the president had wanted me for the company. They're like, he wants you for marketing. And I'm like, no, it's just, and it was great. It was very helpful. My business took off during the time of mentorship. It was a great experience. And I remember it was August of 2018. Was it August of 2018? No. It was August.
Yeah.
Was it August? Was it that fast?
I think so.
It was sometime in 2018. Yeah. That I was in the office. I happened to be in LA and I was visiting the Abacus office just before I was going to a conference. And I had been such a long week. Like I had Luca, my son, he was, just one. It had been crazy. And like, the business was taking off. I was burnt out. And I remember just sitting, I'm in the lobby and like, they have wine in their office too, which is fantastic. Plus
in the reception area.
Yeah, wine fridge right behind me. I'm drinking a glass of wine before I go to this networking conference thing. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, JD, just buy my company already. And he literally rubbed his, you rub your hands together for those who can't see. And that was kind of it. And I said it in like passing. And then 2 days later, I was on a train back to San Diego. And I was like, you know what? Like, I just want to know what's in my back pocket.
Yeah.
And so I emailed him and I basically was like, if I merge, what would it look like? And that's what started it. And I went down the journey and that was initially with me merging in as a partner, like just coming in, being a financial planner under the brand, coming in financial planner, kind of equal with everybody else, but I'd be a partner in the company. And that was what I ended up saying no to though. That was like 2 months of kind of research and talking to other planners, and looking at what my options would be, what my life would look like and just kind of career wise. And I said no to that. Mm-hmm. So that was, I did say no. Do you want me to go into how I ended up saying yes as well?
Yeah. But I also, like, at that point, what were your concerns that made you say no? Like, what was the reason that you knew that that particular deal was not the right one for you?
It was the giving up of control. I love Abacus. It's a great company and they have a lot of, I always call it secret Abacus, the things that are, I'm now working in my role to make public, but that was my concern. My concern actually was, as great as the people were, I do financial planning a certain way. And so that was one of my concerns, but also the brand I had built, everything I had worked on, their marketing is awful. And that was basically it, that my concern was, knowing that I have an online presence, I do all the social media, the podcast, like all of the marketing things that I do. And then looking at their website, which I like just recently linked to on Workable Wealth, but it's like a year in and I'm like, the new website goes live in like 3 months and then it'll be better. But I basically said people are great. I'm concerned about the process and what I'd be giving up. And also your marketing sucks. I cannot merge with a company whose marketing sucks. I said that point blank and all of the employees now tease me that I say that publicly, but it's just a little, it's dated. It was dated. It's definitely progressed.
How did they take that feedback?
He actually was like, yeah, well, and it was in that conversation because it took me a bit. I was like, I was kicking the can. I knew I was going to say no like 3 to 4 weeks prior. And then he was the one who followed back up and he's like, hey, you've had time. Like, what are your thoughts? And then finally we hopped on the phone and I was like, it's not a fit. Mm-hmm. And I was like, also your marketing sucks. It's not aligned. Like, I can't, it doesn't match. And then he said the follow-up to that was, well, do you want to be CMO, which is chief marketing officer? Like that was right in that conversation. I said no. And then he said, well, do you want to be chief marketing officer? And I was like, wait, what? And turns out they were building a whole executive team. And they had recognized their marketing sucks.
Without you telling them, they knew it.
Yeah, they were realizing that there were some improvements to make. And so that opened up a whole nother conversation that led to the eventual sale.
Okay. All right. Let's dive into that whole journey a little bit, just from a personal and professional standpoint. You touched on this already of like, you spent all this time and energy and like poured your heart and soul into building Workable Wealth. What kind of fears or frustrations or like stresses did you have about letting go of that?
Oh my gosh, so many. I mean, I had so many concerns that kept me up at night. And a lot of those concerns ultimately, like what kind of life do I want for myself? And I found myself very, very concerned with what people would think of me. Like very concerned about like the audience that I had built, my clients, like the message and the way that I portray myself on social media and all of the things I put out there. Because I always talk about social media is not real life. My social media is also not real life. I mean, it is. It's a piece of it. But you don't see like the struggles behind the scenes or, the hearing that I, miss time with my kids. Like I don't put a ton of that out there. I speak to it a bit. But there was that. I was very concerned with people thinking like, oh, she couldn't hack it. She couldn't do it. I got caught up that way. And then, but all of the time that I had built to do this thing and what I was building at Workable Wealth and still building under the brand, I think are two different things. Mm-hmm. I realized I could separate them. I have the clients that I love servicing. and that I love working with. But ultimately, in all of those concerns, I knew I wanted to have a bigger impact. And I wanted to do more. And it really became this like reflection of, okay, I built this thing and how do I scale it on my own? How do I continue to scale it on my own? And what does that mean for me in my life? Or how do I continue to scale and the impact with the support of another, you know, company and kind of being able to impact their advisors? And how we talk about negotiations, how I kind of got the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
But I was very concerned. I mean, it was down to the wire of me signing. Like, I mean, it was the day before I signed. I remember sketching out, like I had the giant post-it notes on the floor of our living room with my husband, like wine in hand. And I'm like, pros and cons. Like, I'm still like, literally I'm signing the next day. Like, paperwork's been drawn. I've had the attorneys reviewed all of the things that happened and I'm still there like, are we sure? And ultimately it came down to, like the impact that I want to have in people's lives. And we've talked about this, like my goal of, you know, impacting 50,000 women or people around their finances versus me building a financial planning firm. Because that was what I was doing. I was building a financial planning firm, which, like, dear Lord, trying to scale that thing to impact 50,000 lives is going to be a little bit harder than, you know, than taking the route that I'm kind of taking now. And so that was it. I realized what I was building was like this educational and training platform and this space to bring in people to connect. And the clients are fantastic. And I wanted to have the ability to have them serviced, like to have them, if I can't work with them, but that we have people to do that. And that was what I realized, you know, do I want to build a huge financial planning firm? No. Do I want to impact, you know, a bunch of people around their finances? Yes. Okay. Then this was kind of the move that I had to make.
It is no secret that wholesale buying and selling has shifted this year with COVID. Many brick and mortar shops are placing smaller wholesale orders more frequently, and they are leveraging new ways of sourcing products for their shelves. So what can we as the product makers do to make their lives easier and also strengthen our relationship with our wholesale accounts in the process? I recently asked several brick and mortar shop owners how their buying preferences are changing, how they want to be marketed to, and how manufacturers can best support them right now. This free interview series is available for download right now at prooftoproduct.com/COVID interviews. So on the professional side, for listeners, I witnessed this firsthand because I'm in a small group with Mary Beth, but I understand the struggle, but when you lay it out like that, it seems like a no-brainer for you to like meet that goal of influencing and impacting 50,000 women in their finances, right? Helping them. Mm-hmm. But you were also weighing this from a personal standpoint of your own ego, your family's needs financially, your family's needs with in time that you're available and that your husband's available and, you know, all of those things, right? And so this is a very layered decision.
Super layered. And that was, you know, so we're talking, you know, my ego is involved from like the having to have my face on everything. Because that's how we build, you know, all of us small business owners, we know that, like, we are good at the hustle and the putting our faces out there and doing the thing. And I had that down. And so that was like the one thing I'm like, do I have, you know, am I failing if I don't keep my face on everything?
Yeah.
But then there was the, you know, I alluded to it. I had spent 2018, my business took off. I took on for a financial planning company, financial planning firm, took on 30 clients that year, which is, you know, they talk about like max typically is 2 clients a month, 24. Like, that's when you know you're doing great. I took on 30. I was trying to scale my team. Everything was, I had gone through a lot. So my business took off, which is, you know, pros and cons of selling when your business is in that growth mode. But I also had missed a ton of Luca's life. Like, I remember with Ellie, I had, you know, I'll talk about this. Like, with Ellie, I was new business owner. She was born in 2015 and I had a ton of guilt about being a working mom and, you know, her at home. So that I went through and I had some complications. So I actually had like some postpartum depression with her that like I navigated through. And then with Luca, you know, I felt like I missed a ton because the business took off and I realized, okay, well, what am I doing here? What am I doing this for? So that was the biggest, it wasn't, and it's funny because I still work a ton, but I have the mental load is not as bad. Like, that's really what it is.
Yeah.
But so it was the time in the family life and what I want my life to look like. And then we can talk like negotiating. Like, I negotiated my butt off for what we can kind of talk about, like how things panned out.
That was where I was heading next. Like, what were the non-negotiables? What were the things that you, like, insisted upon?
Yeah.
What did you push back on?
Yeah. And I mean, ultimately what happened, to be completely honest, the way this all went down was obviously leaning on our small group a lot for feedback and insight in terms of, like, you know, asking the tough questions of the company to make sure it was a fit. I went through with something that's called life planning. One of my other financial planner friends took me through, and it's just like the very preliminary, but it's three simple questions. And I think you and I have talked about them previously, but this is what was basically did it for me. And it was, the questions are, if you had all of the money in the world, where would you spend your time? Basically. So that was like, that was a big thing. If you had all the money in the world, no financial concerns, where would you spend your time? And I realized I'd still spend my time educating women around their finances, family and traveling and educating women around their finances is still on that list.
Yep.
And then it goes to, imagine you have 5 years left to live. Don't know when it'll happen. You know, where will you spend your time then? And then it's like, imagine you have 24 hours left to live. You know, what are the things that you know, these are like, it's super emotional, especially for women and moms and everything else going on in the news right now. But imagine you have 24 hours left to live. Like, what would you miss? What would you regret? And realizing, you know, it came back to like kids, family, travel, like, you know, I want to be, you know, I want to be more present and I want to impact more lives. You know, nowhere in there did I say like, I need to own a business. Like, there was never, you know,
I want to be on social media every single day.
Yeah. Or scrolling, you know, and it was doing that work that made me realize my focus could switch from the business owner to like the impact side. And that was like my perspective has really shifted in the past 18 months. And we kind of talked about this as well previously, or you and I have talked about it. We hit an enough point. I had worked enough to get the business to the point, like I was able, like, we're okay. We were able to live the life. Like I talk about an enough number with my clients all the time. Like, and I had the budget sketched out for like 4 years in my little spreadsheet for us. Like, here is the number we need to meet. And I mean, it worked out perfectly because we were planning for me to be able to support us. And I asked for a number in like October, you know, 2018. I didn't sign until March, but I asked for the number. I basically said, here's what I need to have to make it work, because I need to not worry about whatever happens with, you know, my husband's career at this point in time. Right. And sure enough, I got the number, and then my husband got laid off in January. I signed in March. And so it kind of, you know, it all worked out. And even now, like, I've been able to negotiate more, but that was a big thing, was like, I negotiated and I asked for more. And then I asked for, and this is where I was very relentless, like in how I tell my clients. So the non-negotiables were being able to work remote. So the company is based out of Santa Monica. I live in San Diego. So I'm the chief marketing officer for, the company manages like $2.5 billion. I'm here in my office running the marketing for it. And I have a team of five. I had to be able to unplug by like 5 p.m. Like, I didn't want anybody bugging me. And basically they wrote into my contract, they wouldn't bother me past 5. And if they do, I could, you know, make them put a quarter in the "we won't bug Mary Beth" jar. It's actually in my contract.
That's awesome.
That I can work remote from Italy. I think like 3 months a year is also in my contract, because, you know, I'm planning my dream life here. Why not put all of the things
put
in there?
Put it all in.
Yep. Put it all in. And those were, and so those were like the lifestyle kind of things, like mostly trying to, I needed like those boundaries built in, because when you're type A, you skew all over the place and you'll overwork yourself anyways, whether it's my business or somebody else. But the things I negotiated for the impact were, I negotiated being able to keep Workable Wealth as the website. Like, so I'm now the chief marketing officer of Abacus. Workable Wealth is basically negotiated to be kept up. It's like a lead flow platform. It's an educational platform for women. I have a podcast, Work Your Wealth. I have the book, Work Your Wealth also. Those things were all negotiated. I have the rights to them. They stay. And I negotiated basically like funding through the merger. So through like the budget and the way they valued me, it was factored in that I could still have funds to keep the Workable Wealth website running.
Okay.
So in terms of like the newsletter, the blogs, like the content that we push out for financial education, that was all negotiated to keep running.
That's smart.
Which was interesting, because, you know, they, mergers and acquisitions are big in this industry, and any of the other partners, like their websites all folded in. And so I came in like, I'll help you out with this. And like, we'll update the story, but like, I'm keeping this. Is still the impact, and the impact I want to make is kind of twofold now. Like, I have been able to teach these advisors and build the marketing over here, but I still have the Workable Wealth platform. And that's a really fun and creative play area.
Totally.
To be able to, you know, like, do newsletters, to launch different things. Like, it's just like, and I still have that because I've captured that audience, and I recognize in marketing, like, those are two different audiences.
Right.
Like, if I try to bring them over to Abacus, they're not really, the messages aren't aligned right now as it is, but but I mean, the services are still aligned with those financial planning, but I think I speak to a very specific audience, and Abacus is more general. So, but that was what I negotiated. I negotiated being able to keep those things. I would not have done it if I had to let go of the workable wealth.
Yeah.
Like that platform, if that had to go away, I don't imagine that I would have done it.
I think that still gives you, and I'm projecting my own feelings here, but I feel like that gives you that comfort level of, okay, what I built is still there, and I can still nurture it when I want to. And, you know, if for some reason this doesn't work out down the road at some point, I can still go do this. Or I don't know. That's just me, again, projecting my own feelings. But I think it doesn't feel like you're completely letting go of your identity as a business owner because you still have that.
Right. And the biggest thing was for me is like, whether it's the business itself, but the platform, because that's the impact. Mm-hmm. I measure the impact I get to make through that. And so that if that had to go away, that would have taken away the impact that I get to personally have as well. Like a lot of people still find me through that. Anything comes from there still. And so that was for me from an impact and like being able to achieve my life goals. That's what that represents right now is like being able to reach more people. It's much more measurable. I know I get to impact advisors' lives and expand their reach as well. So I'm helping to do that. But that for me, you know, because I always think I'm like, was it an ego thing? And like, what is it? But I think it's not, because I've definitely, even on my podcast now, I've interviewed a variety of the female planners from Abacus, because there's such a spectrum of talent there now that have tapped into it, and it's fantastic. And so I think it's a great resource and tool for me to use to lift them up, but for me still to be able to like have that creative outlet, because all in all, like I'm still marketer, but I'm still passionate about this financial education. I need to have my own creative outlet. And I love being able to have this like little play space over here that I can
absolutely
do things with.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What lessons did you learn about yourself through this whole process?
It's been a huge transition switching from like chasing dollars to chasing actually like life kind of goals and experiences and what I want life to look like otherwise. And like going from like closing the clients to like measuring an impact, I think it's almost harder in some ways to like hold yourself accountable to and to go back to. I struggle a little bit in that. I think it's just like the numbers are always like easy, especially as a financial planner, but measuring impact, it's still hard to get caught up in those things of like comparing yourself to other people and those things. But I think I learned that I'm resilient. I learned that it does not have to be my face on everything, which is what I thought and like was carrying with me initially. Learned that I am a great and present mother, even if I work full time. You know, ultimately, in the end, especially after doing a lot of like this inner work and reflecting all of the things I talk about, like the security and the safety of a financial future, which are very important, we can talk about. But for me, it really comes down to like those life. What do you get to take with you in the end, and how can I begin to live my life today or make small changes? I think like in Shonda Rhimes' book, Year of Yes, like she said, like every time her daughter asks to play, she said, it just takes 5 minutes, like things like that, like small changes I can make today. Or if Ellie or Luca do something funny, like writing it down or writing them letters. And like, there's things like living life like that more intentionally about the actions that I take to like benefit my happiness or the happiness of others versus like trying to look at, you know, constantly meeting this number. So I think that's been like a big shift. And just that you can do it. And it's just one day at a time, and there's no need to constantly be stressed out. It all kind of, you know, it's a journey. All the stuff I tell my clients, which is funny, it's a journey. It's up and down. You're going to crisscross, zigzag. It's okay. Don't stress. Like, you know, which is why I have my own financial planner. But yeah, I just learned that I'm resilient, and it's okay to pivot. It's okay to pivot, I think, is the other thing as entrepreneurs too. We give ourselves a lot of guilt. There's a lot of like, when people, I think I had somebody reach out to me like, yeah, it's hard to be an entrepreneur. I'm like, I'm still owner of this. Like, I'm a part owner of this company that I merged into. I sold, but like, you know, I have a salary. I get distributions as a partner. And so I think that's the other thing too, is it's okay to pivot, and it does not matter what anybody else thinks as long as you're happy with what you're doing.
100% agree with you. Yeah. All right. How do you define success now in your life as an entrepreneur?
Oh my gosh. Honestly, I define success now as work, as balance. Like this notion of work-life balance or whatever it is, but more like there's time for me to take care of myself. There's time for me to take care of myself physically, like mentally, and like spending time with the family and kids. Like if I can intentionally take that time and I can work out in a day, spend a couple hours with kids, get work done, like, and also maybe like journal or read, like that's a win. That is success for me. Like being able to do that. And I realized that that's like, I can make that. If I don't take that time, it's like a self choice. There's nobody, and nobody from this company that I've joined is making me work crazy hours. If I end up doing it, it's because I'm doing it to myself. So I define success as being able to spend time in those areas.
I love it. All right. Well, what advice would you give to anyone that is thinking about selling their business?
Honestly, get an attorney, like have an attorney. That's just the smartest thing to do, and interview multiple attorneys to make sure that they are able to work in your state, that they have experience in selling businesses and understand the rates. But I think the attorney was really important. I think doing a lot of reflection on what it means for you in terms of your life, because there's the financial component, but it's really what it means for you in terms of your life and how it'll get you there, and documenting that, because you want to be able to go back to those things. Yeah. I think we spend time thinking about it. And then there's not a lot of like follow-up or going back to it, but thinking about the impact it has on your life and your lifestyle, your life happiness, for your family. And ultimately, you know, I was a big fan of pros and cons lists. I did so many of them, just different times, and giving yourself time to process it. Yeah. It was a 6-month journey, which I think is, you know, short and long, depending on whose perception you're asking, but 6 months felt like a good time. And like I said, until the very end, I was still like, oh, do I do this? I had done the life planning work and I knew, but it's scary. It's a scary, scary thing. Like I was, you know, it took me a good year to be like, oh, I'm a year. It's like, not even, it's a year now maybe, that I've been there, and it's, you know, I feel good about the work I've done, but it's been a transition.
Yeah, so. For sure. Well, and I think too, because your identity and the general you here, not just you, but like, because our identities are so wrapped up in our businesses, it makes that scariness even more intense.
Yes.
Because you're constantly just doubting yourself of like, is this the right move? Is it not? I don't know. What am I, you
yes.
know?
So that's exactly it. And I mean, there's good days and bad days. There's times, you know, I think I always say, I joke with my other financial planner friends, like, you want to burn it all down. Or we talk about this too, probably. Yeah. Burn it all down. Still have those days even after I've merged and like sold my company or whatever. They're still burn it all down days. But it is like our identities are very wrapped up. And I will say part of me, and it's been like a healing process a bit of like this kind of like new thing. I've gone a little dark on social media because like I'm trying to figure out my own messaging around it, and not even the messaging, but recognizing like I don't have to hustle or share that message in the same way anymore. And so being again intentional about when I post, I want it to be authentic and inspiring. And I think there's a calmness that's come about me that's not as much hustle anymore, that it's more like let's operate with ease. And I'm like, this is different. And so sitting with that.
It's different and nice.
It's nice. It's nice. I actually deleted Instagram, don't judge me, for like 2 months, and it was very peaceful. I put it back on like a week ago.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ooh, you know, and it's great, but it's when I've kind of untethered from some of those things.
Yeah.
And it's been really nice and helpful for me to allow myself that space to unwind and, you know, kind of figure out who I am in this new season of life.
Yeah. Well, I love that. All right. Well, where can people find you online to set up a financial planning consultation or follow your resources on your website? Where do you want to send them?
So you can go to workablewealth.com. And that's an area there. There's an area there to book a consultation call. There's a blog. There's links to the podcast and book. You can also email me at marybeth@workablewealth.com, or I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Mary B. Storge.
Awesome. Well, Mary Beth, thank you so much for your time today and sharing your story, because it's a very vulnerable thing to work super hard for something and build it and then let somebody else like take it from there. And so, I mean, I was on the inside watching this as it went down, and I was up and down emotionally with it too, even though it wasn't my deal at all. But I'm just proud of you, and I know how much work went into this, and you are impacting women's lives and really doing an amazing job of educating women in their finances. So thank you for all you do.
Thank you. Thank you for being here for the journey.
Thanks so much for spending time with us today. Head on over to prooftoproduct.com to join the conversation, access our show notes, and discover free resources to help you build your product-based business. We'll be back next week with a new episode. Thanks again.